This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Broadcasting from the WEEI studios. Powered by Verizon. 93.7 WEEI-FM and HD1. Lawrence, Boston. An Odyssey Sports Station.
Here a while, he's so comfortable being in head coach. He's done it before. He's done it at a high level, won a lot of games. So I'm looking forward to getting things going. You can see he's trying to kind of install the new identity, and I think we're building towards that and just working and just trusting in his ways. And I think everybody's kind of catching the stride as we come off the first week of phase two.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy Stevens,
and three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Welcome to WEEI Afternoons on May Day. May Day, Nick Fitzy Stevens. It's May 1st, so that's the May part of May Day here in New England and pretty much everywhere else. But also, we have May Day with an E, Drake May. He does exist. You do exist, Drake May. Haven't heard from you in an official press conference capacity in quite some time, since prior to the season finale against the Bills. Way back when Gerard Mayo was the coach, Joe Milton was the backup quarterback. There were a lot. Bill Belichick was respected. A lot of things have changed since Drake May spoke at the microphone. Stiz, I don't know why you're shaking your head. Don't shake your effing head at me.
It's already off.
Andrew! It was coming sooner or later.
What in the name of all this? Oh, I got it, guys. Don't worry about it.
Lesson learned. Don't quote Jim Calhoun on the radio.
205.
It's a way to start a show.
The basketball court at the end of my street where I grew up is named the James A. Jim Calhoun.
Is it?
The third basketball. Yeah, in Braintree, yeah. No joke.
And that's the greatest.
First thing I do is I drop an F-bomb every time I go.
Well, it is. That's the greatest clip in the history of radio. For anybody who doesn't remember, it was about recruiting, and I took Emeka Okafor. I didn't take Ryan Gomes, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, let's move past that as quickly as possible and get to Drake May, who was there. He was praising. Okay, we also got to get out of the way, Fitzy. Did it bother you, Fitzy, that Drake May's 11:45 press conference started 12:15-ish?
Yeah, it was a half an hour late.
Yeah.
In quipping online, Jordan Hudson would never allow for this. And she would never let him answer a question about Joe Milton. We're not talking about this. In the end, it didn't. It was just strange because, here he is coming out to talk about leadership and what an honor it is to, year two, no Joe Milton, Josh McDaniels, Mike Vrabel. It's like a half hour late. But then I was talking with Mego, who was kind enough to join me for a quick Six Rings and Football Things pod, reacting to Drake right afterwards. And she said, it was something coming out late of a meeting or whatever. Like it was, they didn't get any information immediately, but in the end it was NBD.
Yeah, I don't think it's a huge deal.
We're just joking around.
And it just doesn't do anybody any favors. Anytime you, A, haven't talked to the media in a while, B, anytime there are little brush fires of questions about, is this guy kind of a diva? Is he kind of tough to deal with? Which we've heard and talked about occasionally here on WEEI Afternoons.
Joe Milton wouldn't have been late. That's all I'm saying.
That's right. He was eager to be the starting quarterback and do these types of things that came with the job. Maybe a little too eager. And let's go there. Let's go to that cut first. Stiz, we have Joe Milton was it, Fitzy, this was the last. We almost made it through this whole press conference without
Phil Perry,
asking.
The handsome hero we needed and deserved.
Yeah, had to sneak it in under the buzzer. You heard Stacey James, last question.
Last question.
So he was asked about the Joe Milton trade, his relationship with Joe Milton. This was his answer.
Yeah, I texted Joe. You know, me and Joe, we came in together. We learned the offense together. We were competing every day to see who outthrow each other and practice. And obviously, he's got a big arm. So it was cool for him to get a chance to. He'll go hopefully and be a backup, and I think you saw him in the Bills game, his potential, and I think he's fun because we got kind of similar play styles a little bit, and it was fun relating to our similar college offense to this offense, and it was cool to kind of be in the room and have somebody to bounce off ideas or, hey, you remember doing this in college and stuff like that. So, pulling for Joe, and I know probably you never know, make play him again or see him down the road.
Hi, Nick Stevens, WEEI Afternoons, or as it was just published on Fox News, WWEI. Question, Andy, you've been around football a lot. Wouldn't it make a lot of sense to have a backup quarterback whose skill set closely emulates or mimics the style of your current starting quarterback? Thanks, I'll hang up and listen.
Yes, I think that's quite true.
Okay.
I've always thought that was a good theory, so you don't have to change too much when he goes in. Also, so Drake said he's getting the opportunity to go somewhere where he might be the backup someday. He could have been the backup here. I think you had Jacoby Brissett over the course of last season making it quite clear he didn't want to come back. Remember, although it was like November, December, Reese is asking him questions in his Sunday
mostly
notes. And
due
he's like,
to the trauma. Like,
exactly.
If he looks at Gillette Stadium now, it's going to be like, oh, my back hurts.
So Joe Milton, the guy in front of him, gone. He won the finale, causing the owner to say we have two quarterbacks here in New England. Why couldn't he be the backup quarterback here? Okay, that's my first question. He could have been the backup quarterback here. We all know that. They didn't have to sign Josh Dobbs. My second question, and this is where I get nitpicky, and this is where people are going to say I'm a dink on the radio, and well, they're probably right. I'm probably a dink on the radio. But if you like a guy as much as he... I'm a dink in real life. Good points.
Isn't that an effing dink?
No, I'm staying away from that word for the rest of the day. The next 3 hours and 50 minutes, I'm going to do my best to avoid that word because I feel like one per show is more than enough to slip up
probably
in that direction.
Probably so, says the FCC, your boss, Dan, Stiz, etc.
What's the F and the FCC stand for? Nope.
You want to tell us?
Fun.
So he talks about how fun it was to work with Drake May. I mean, with Joe Milton, and we had similar offenses in college, and we loved talking about that and playing styles. And we
throwing competition,
yeah, all of that. And you texted him, like, if you're friendly with somebody and they get traded, and I'm judging here. I'm asking you, like, I would have called. Like, if my best buddy or my good buddy that I worked with for a really long time was asked to no longer work with me, I would call. Doesn't that say something that he texted him? I feel like texting is very superficial. That's what I do to people that I'm not that close with, but I kind of want to just put it out there, reach out
like,
a little bit.
I want to look like that's you text people for optics. Like, hey, I just want to make sure
you know. Tweet for optics is the first.
Well, so, if you tweet at someone, if the best you can do is tweet, then they don't matter. And you want the public to see
yes.
that you superficially care.
Next step up is text. Right.
You text optically for an interpersonal check mark, as in, OK, yeah, I did hear from Andy. I even think like texting happy birthday and whatnot is also pretty lame. Like if you love someone enough, you can give them a call. That, even if they don't pick up, just make the effort.
That's a great point. I agree with you on that.
100%. Like pick up the. It's not that hard.
Right.
It's right there. I mean, you pick up the phone to text. I get it. But yeah. OK, so good. He contacted him. I don't know. I mean, if they were that
did Joe reply,
buddies, what's he going to say to him? What's he going to say to him?
I mean, I just like, hey, I loved working with you, man. Didn't unless he's not comfortable talking with him because he may or may not have factored into the idea that the team needed to trade him, maybe even voice that. I don't know. I just think if you're as close as you just reportedly indicated
yeah.
you were, mm-hmm. that I think you would call. I agree with you 100%. Happy birthday in a text, not that close to you. If I FaceTime you and sing happy birthday, we're close, right? And mm-hmm. somewhere in between is the phone call to say happy birthday. Hope you're having mm-hmm. a good day, whatever. So that struck me in that Joe Milton answer. He tried to say all the right things there. I really think he tried to say all the right things there. But I think there's little hints in there where he got out over his skis. basically saying he's going to a place where he can be the backup quarterback. Like it's almost like he wanted to say get a chance to start and then realized.
How could he not be the backup? He already was the backup here.
That's a great point, Fitzgerald. Great point.
Hopefully he gets a chance to go someplace and, you know, Drake is aw shucks in his way towards an answer that was a little awkward for everybody involved. I mean, again, I just want to know what it was like. How bad was his attitude, or how much of a pain in the ass was he, or how much under whose skin did he get? Yes, we all know, audience, that Drake May is much better, or that everyone believes he's much better. Yes, I believe he is. I'm one of them. But for the love of God, if your starting quarterback says his skill set is similar to mine, I think that you'd want to have the guy whose skill set is similar. Unless, honestly, Joe Milton is just a total bozo. Like, unless he just, like, he's got a laser rocket arm and he can run real fast left and run real fast right and, you know, be as elusive AF, like, a you know, chasing a chicken in a Rocky movie. But otherwise, like, is that why? Because Josh Dobbs can't throw it as far. But he's now, of course, also Josh Dobbs, super smart guy, just doesn't have Joe Milton's physical skill set. But he's also a Vrabro.
Yeah, and I don't want to make more of this than needs to be, because obviously it wasn't on top of mind for the reporters down there because it was the last question asked by Phil Perry, snuck in under the buzzer by Stacey James.
At the buzzer.
I hate doing this, but I'm going to do this anyway because, hell, I'm in a different role now. I used to hate when I was in that room as a beat reporter when I would turn on the radio and hear the radio host bitching about questions that weren't asked of a certain person in a press conference, but Fitzy, mm-hmm. We are who we are now. We're on the radio full time, and we have to do what we have to do. Were there any questions that you wanted asked that were not asked? Because I have a very one that is right on the tip of my tongue.
I didn't hear anything about not speaking to the media at the end of last season. And/or did you ever get a chance to connect with Gerard Mayo or Alex Van Pelt, summating the work you guys put, you know, whether it was a text to say, sorry, things didn't work out for you, or thanks very much for being my HC or my OC in my rookie year in the NFL.
Yeah, so Alex Van Pelt's an interesting one to bring up because he kind of brought him up in talking about Josh McDaniels, but not by name. He's like, and yeah, the guys that were here last year. Oh, good to know that Alex Van Pelt is now, quote, the guys that were here last year. He doesn't have a name. It's weird. He must have left that in his locker at Gillette when they wouldn't let him back in. But no, first and foremost for me would have been, Drake, we haven't talked to you in this formal setting for a while. We didn't speak with you after the final game, and you weren't available the next day when some of the other team leaders were talking about Gerard Mayo and that situation. How come? You know, what went into that decision to not talk to the media at the close of your rookie season? I thought that needed to be asked, and I was honestly surprised it didn't get asked. I know how these things work, and they usually sort of tiptoe into things and start with the, oh, how's things with Mike Vrabel? Oh, are you pumped at all the new talent you got? Oh, Will Campbell's fun. These various things. And then somewhere when you realize, oh, we're like halfway through this press conference, we should probably start asking the more pointed questions. I thought that would be asked. So 3:30, we will talk to our guy Tom Curran, get his reaction from the Drake May press conference. Also a reminder today, we haven't been able to do this last couple of weeks, but 5:30, quiz with Stiz. Let's makes go. A return. And I need a victory. I need a victory bad.
I'm on a roll. I won three in a row?
I believe you've won three in a row. I am struggling. I need to end the losing streak, so we'll have those later in the show. But we're starting
Andy, it's great to have you as my backup on Quiz with Stiz.
Oh, you son of a gun. And there's nothing I can say because there's a scoreboard, and the scoreboard has called me a loser for three straight weeks.
And make sure you tune in at roughly 5:40 for the Andy Hart excuse train, which will be boarding right around then.
Sponsored by Amtrak?
Well, that's right. Not necessarily. The excuse train will only come if I lose.
Yeah.
I'm expecting to win.
Gotcha.
I'm going in with confidence.
I'm glad you have confidence.
I've learned lessons. Do not use Ted as a lifeline, regardless of what noise, gesture he makes.
5:45, Who's Under the Bus, sponsored by our friends at Greyhound and Peter Pan, as Andy throws someone who gave him a wrong answer.
No, I'll be honest with you, just a quick aside before we get back to Drake May. Unless the question is something like, where was Ted Johnson born? You know, what is Ted Johnson weigh? What is Ted Johnson's favorite color of underwear? I don't know that I'm using the lifeline because he has really not been helpful to me in recent weeks.
Yeah, but the funny thing was he crushed it for me on that Wolf of Wall Street question.
He came out of left field with that. But also, Andy, it's not only when you lose, because we famously fought over what color ketchup used to be, and you won that game. And that was one of the games you gave me the most crap.
Because I like truth on the radio, and that's why when we get into Jordan's situation with Bill Belichick, because, yes, we're going to get into it. There was a tremendous column in the Boston Globe today by their human activities or human something editor writing about Bill Belichick and the whole situation.
I'm sorry, their what?
It was human behavior. Their human
behavioralist is now weighing in on Bill Belichick.
Yep, wrote a commentary that had some cheap shots at the situation mixed in there. We actually reached out to the woman. She declined the ability to come on the radio and talk.
Oh, just
about
like
this
Jordan's
behavior.
Mom, who runs the kinky toy shop.
Yes, yes. But Drake May, he's learning to be a leader, and that's I thought that was one of his better answers, talking about how he can become a better leader for this football team. And I'm looking on my cut sheet here, Stiz. What number was that? Five, Stiz. Becoming a better leader. See, you give me the list and I can still screw it up, guys. But no more F-bombs. So here's Drake May on becoming a better leader.
Your teammates have mentioned how much you've grown as a leader this year. I'm wondering, is that something you've been focused on? And what goes into trying to be a leader when you are?
Yeah. I mean, not something that... I mean, obviously, you know, comes with position, and you know, I like to hopefully call myself this year a leader, and I think working towards that. I think just earning the guys' respect, a lot of new faces in here, you know, come in here and work hard, and you know, show those guys that we picked up in free agency, or the rookies, or guys we picked up, just kind of my work ethic. I think kind of, you know, start off from that standpoint, show the coaches. I think once you get, you know, new staff and new players, you want to show them, hey, it's not relaxed time. I think, you know, once I'm, you know, going to be the starter, just, you know, keep things, you know, pushing forward, and but saying more than, you know, and whether in walkthrough or little things like that, just kind of build that and not focus too much on it. Just hopefully it comes natural.
What'd you think of that answer in terms of the budding leadership of your second-year quarterback, who, as he noted, various points in this like, you're the quarterback, so there's expectation, there's pressure, you have to be the leader. Where do you think his leadership is going?
Well, if I'm to believe Pop Douglas, who told us 2 weeks ago at the Doug Kide LLS fundraiser at Vitamin C, you know, said in person to a mass group of people, he said Drake May's leadership is off the charts. He understands the role and the task at hand and what kind of position he has been given as much as earned, and he's taken charge. And he said, make no mistake, like in that locker room now, he is a leader. Like he is displaying the all the traits that you would want to see from a leader. He's being more assertive. He definitely knows this is his offense, that this is and is going to, or rather should be, his team. So I'm fine with that. And actually, I thought this was one of those answers, even though it, you know, no one's ever going to say like, oh, this was a masterclass in wordsmithing or anything. It came across as affable and easy enough to, like, this is where I felt like he was most at ease. Just, it doesn't seem like it's the idea of being in charge and being the leader and being the guy, the North Star that the team looks up to, is going to be that difficult for him.
Especially as Ted Johnson has noted, and the trend continued this week with the release of Joe Cardona, the longest tenured Patriot, I believe, is now Kyle Duggar, who's not exactly the most outspoken, vociferous leader. So, you know, the opportunity is there. The vacuum is there. The opening is there for Drake May and others. I mean, hell, Ted speculated yesterday that Will Campbell could be a captain on the offensive line as a rookie. You could
wouldn't
have
surprise me at all.
It wouldn't stun me if you have Captain May, Captain Campbell, Captain Gonzalez. Like, you could have these first, second, third year type players.
That's a fun game. Let's play Guess That Captain.
Okay, can you like those three? No.
Gonzo, I don't know.
Too quiet?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, maybe he's more assertive on the field. Maybe he's a little more maybe he does that with his teammates, but we all know how demure and shy he can be off the field. I bet you Harold Landry's a captain.
Yeah, that would not surprise
me. That's a trusted lieutenant of Mike Vrabel.
Also, don't know how they're going to do the captains. Will there be a vote? Will there be a quote-unquote, air quotes, vote? And then Mike Vrabel will pick who his captains are, Bill Belichick style. But no, as they set the tone, Milton Williams is the highest paid free agent, have a chance to be a captain.
Oh, Morgan Moses.
Morgan Moses. See, the only thing there is, to me, it's either Will Campbell or Morgan Moses. I don't think you're likely to have two captains. I'll tell you one who I think should be a lock of a captain. I saw him in the front row courtside at the Celtics the other night. That would be Brendan Schooler. I'm guessing he'll be your special teams captain.
Brother School. Yeah.
Yeah, Brother School with the crosses in his eye black on his cheeks. So I think he'll be a captain. But I do think that, and Ted has kind of laughed at me when I brought this up, the leadership, captaincy, spokesman, all those
non-football playing roles that will be up for grabs. Hunter Henry has been a past captain. Could he return to captaincy? I think he would be a great candidate. It'll be interesting to see how those roles develop. But certainly Drake May is going to be at the head of the pecking order, because if you have a starting quarterback, he kind of needs to be the captain. It's the way it's done in the National Football League. Hell, Jacoby Brissett started the season as the starting quarterback, and he was your captain a year ago. So I think Drake May, as he evolves as a leader, will evolve as a captain. We'll continue to talk about Drake May, his first media appearance since back in the old days when Joe Milton, Gerard Mayo, and everybody else were still part of the Patriots. Up next, though, we're also going to touch on the Boston Red Sox. Worst loss of the season. Don't believe me. Believe their play-by-play guy on Nesson, who called it that, in the immediacy of the aftermath of a debacle that saw a 6-0 lead in the sixth turn into a 7-6 loss in extra innings. Little Red Sox talk up next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball, give me that score and much more with What's Trending.
The Greg Hill Show, weekdays 6 to 10.
Now, here's What's Trending on WEEI.
All right, here's what's trending now on WEEI and WEEI.com, brought to you by the 99 Restaurant. The Red Sox fell to the Toronto Blue Jays in Game 2 of their three-game series last night, 7-6 in 10 innings. Boston held a 6-0 lead after the top of the sixth, but gave up seven straight to lose the game. Lucas Giolito, however, was solid in his Red Sox debut, going six innings, giving up three runs while striking out seven. The teams play the rubber game today. First pitch at 7:07. It's Tanner Houck against Jose Barrios on the mound, and you can listen to the game on WEEI FM 93.7. And across the Shaw's and Star Market, WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's perfecting the art of fresh. Mass Mutual pregame show with Christian Arcand begins at 6:07 tonight, and Will Fleming and Cooper Boardman have the call of the game. Per ESPN's Mike Reese, the Patriots anticipate announcing the 2025 inductee to their Hall of Fame early next week. Fan voting closed yesterday, and Giants rookie pass rusher Abdul Carter shared that he has also received a prank call during the NFL draft, joining Shedeur Sanders, Mason Graham, Tyler Warren, Kyle McCord, and Chase Lund. Two game sixes in the NBA tonight. Knicks are at the Pistons. New York leads that series 3-2. And in the late game, the Nuggets are at the Clippers. Denver also leads 3-2. And four game sixes in the Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. Maple Leafs are at the Senators. Toronto leads 3-2. Golden Knights are at the Wild. Vegas leads 3-2. Stars are at the Avalanche. Dallas leads that series 3-2. And the Kings are at the Oilers. Edmonton also leads 3-2. The lobster rolls are back at the Nines. Visit your local 99 today and try their famous colossal lobster rolls. 100% North Atlantic lobster piled high on grilled brioche, served hot buttered or with just the right amount of mayo and celery with fries and coleslaw. You gotta love the Nines. I'm Dan Ball. This is Trending Now on WEEI and WEEI.com. More afternoons coming up right after this.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company, from America for America.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
You can stream the show or listen on demand anytime. Just download the Odyssey app.
That's A-U-D-A-C-Y.
Save WEEI as a favorite and listen wherever you go. Now, more of WEEI Afternoons.
With Hart, Fitzy, and Johnson.
2-1 pitch. Swing, line drive, left field over Guerrero. It's a hit. The game's over. Toronto scores 7 in a row. Guerrero scores. Alejandro Kirk with the game-winning walk-off single. And the Red Sox lose one that was almost impossible to lose. 7-6 and 10.
Cooper Boardman's call here on WEEI. Extra innings loss for the Red Sox. And I actually thought the same thing. And I don't see it anywhere. You know how in football, Nick Fitzy Stevens, they have the probability meter thing at the bottom of the page where, like, who's going to win. That
had
was
to have been Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl 51 level at 6-0.
6-0 in the sixth. You're cruising. Giolito is cruising. Great first start. Two outs for him. Wow, low pitch count. Walk, home run. Oh, that's fine. Still a good outing. 6-3. We got the best bullpen in baseball.
Hey, it's a quality start, right?
Absolutely.
Here comes Fitzy's guy, Whitlock.
Yeah, how'd that go?
He was due.
Oh, he was due. No, is that what we're doing
great.
Here?
Not great, no.
Yeah.
Listen, believe me, last night, helping the kiddos get ready for bed, disembarked from the Sox game for a little bit, thought everything was great. Cruise control was set. Giolito, loving it. All of a sudden, like, whoa, how'd this game get tied? Look down, like, oh, three runs in the sixth. Oh, Whitlock, three. Oh, Garrett, as I've been pumping your tires all season, savior of the bullpen, maybe the best pitcher on staff, right-handed Andrew Miller. How could you, Garrett? How could you? I will say this. You know, the first start back, I know it was a low pitch count and all, and Giolito looked better than advertised up until he kind of Giolito'd.
That's exactly what I thought, too, till he Giolito'd. I was like, oh, yeah, didn't he lead the league in home runs allowed a couple years ago when he was
before his arm
still
fell apart
healthy.
And then the Sox had to pay $20 million for him to rehab it and get it repaired? Yeah. It was
great. Dan Ball, yes?
Per Baseball Savant, the Red Sox had a 98% win probability as the top of the sixth became the bottom of the sixth.
Oh, as long as it wasn't 98.5. So, Andy, here's the million-dollar question. Don't you think it was a bad idea, or do you think now, especially in hindsight, that it was a bad idea for Alex Cora to leave Giolito in for six? Because in his first start back, Brian Baio, who was not coming off of Tommy John surgery and not having pitched in 18 months, he went five. Now, his pitch count was probably a little higher.
Yeah.
But I bet you Cora would tell you, like, I probably should have cut it at five.
Got a little greedy.
I don't know. Like, things like that just have a corollary effect. And then, you know, one bad thing leads to another. I don't know. You know,
it's certainly a conversation to be had when you're cruising like that. A 6-0 lead, low pitch count. Mm-hmm. You feel good. And I do believe in the take a guy out, or I used to believe in this when I was a freaking little league coach. Like, if a kid's having a good night, try to manage it so that the kid goes home having had a good night. Try to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Especially kids mm-hmm. that are not the star players or and I do think there's something to be said for Giolito leaving that game with his chest held high, feeling really good. Your bullpen was not taxed. I don't think you need, if anything, you expected, right, to probably go to the bullpen, best case scenario in the sixth inning. You probably said, give me five innings from Giolito. If you give me five, we are golden. That's a great first outing back out there. So, yeah, but I also, in the details of the situation, 6-0, the way he's cruising, he then goes out and gets two outs. All the damage came with two outs, I think maybe with two strikes. I think it was two outs and two strikes before the wheels fell
off
for him.
That's terrible.
Yes, so, yeah, it's unfortunate the way it played out, but that's not exactly the biggest issue. Like, okay, so 6-0 became 6-3. Okay, that's fine. We'll still win. And then you didn't. And the wheels kind of fell off. Your bullpen kind of fell off. Your guy Slayton ends up giving the game-losing hit. Was there a little bit of, see, there was a combination of bad baseball mixed with bad luck in my mind there. And if anyone was watching, you had the runner on second, tagging up, Rafaela, fly ball to center field. It's Vlad Guerrero tagging up. I don't think Rafaela put himself in position to make the best throw on the catch. He was kind of out of off balance going backwards. And then the throw ends up hitting Guerrero. He's out if it doesn't hit him. I firmly believe he's out if it doesn't hit him. But do you make a slightly better throw if your mechanics are a little, your fundamentals are a little bit better? You catch the ball kind of coming forward into the throwing motion. So there was a little misfortune there, and then they played the percentages, had a couple walks, and the hit wasn't one of those cheap hits also, by the way. That last hit was going to be a hit either way. It wasn't like, oh, the outfield's in. We got to, you know, if he puts the ball in the outfield, no, that was a line drive to left center that was probably a double in a regular situation. So that was a meltdown. That was, as Dave O'Brien said, the worst loss of the season. And this is going to fuel, I know our boy Ted, who will be in at 3 o'clock, top of the hour, put this in our email chain. This is going to fuel those that feel like this team is going down the same road as last year's team, where it's like, Are you just going to hang around 500? Like, every time you have a little winning streak, is that going to be followed by a losing streak to make sure you're always within a game of 500? Can we not distance ourselves from that record, build a little bit of a cushion there? And this is a game you would point to that's like, this is an unacceptable loss, I guess I would say it. It was unlosable right up until the point you lost it in extra innings.
Where you found a way, hey, this team's, hey, there's something special, though, like the 2025 Red Sox finding ways to lose games no one ever thought possible.
Yeah, yeah, no. And it's also, I heard Wiggy bring this up this morning. This team's been in a lot of blowouts in both directions. Blowout games in both
directions.
They just
won their previous three games, 30-8.
Right. Well, this was a game that looked like it was trending toward a blowout, and I don't take the offense off the hook either. Like, we're going to fixate on Giolito. Okay, the wheels fell off there. Then we'll fixate on the bullpen. Well, there's no rule that says when you get to six runs, you have to stop scoring. Like, it's okay to
continue.
Where'd
the offense go? That's a great question.
They put
like,
it away.
Hey, guys.
It's like they decided, oh, we've done enough here. We did our duty tonight. You put six runs on the board. We're good enough. The strikeouts were up again. They crept back up. You had another double-digit strikeout game, and you didn't match. The night before, it was five strikeouts, five home runs. Well, they struck out 11 times. They did not hit 11 home runs in this. Yes, Dan Ball.
Of the seven hits you had, one came after the sixth inning for the Red Sox offense.
Yeah, that's what. And I don't know if that's, you know, credit the pitching for the Blue Jays, if that's a mental thing where you lost your edge because, okay, let's just cruise to another victory over the Blue Jays. By the way, a Blue Jays team that doesn't score a ton of runs, hasn't been great offensively. They've basically been Vlad and not a whole heck of a lot of anything. Springer has cooled down since he was killing
you. Since he took it to us earlier in the year.
So this
Who's on the bump tonight?
Dan Ball, who we got tonight?
Buckle up, folks. Tanner Houck is on the mound to try to win a series for your Red Sox.
Confidence level, Fitzy?
I'll put it at over 50%. I'll give them an over 50% chance of winning tonight.
So slightly better than a coin flip chance to win a ball game tonight.
I'm going
to
go 62%.
Okay. Chance. Yeah, I think they'll probably win. They have to be a little bit embarrassed by that loss from last night. And
yeah, what are they more embarrassed or is Toronto more like emboldened?
Did you give Toronto life? That's a great question because Toronto certainly had life against you at Fenway Park, and then you were well on your way to taking control of this series the way you should, I believe. I think this will be a rebound effort, but I don't trust Tanner Houck. That's the problem with this whole situation here. The starting pitcher really has a lot of control of the way a ball game plays out, and I don't trust Tanner Houck. Yes, Dan Ball.
After the 11 earned run outing, he went 6 innings, 2 runs against the White Sox, then 5 innings, 4 runs last time out against the Guardians. So better,
so quality
not
start,
great.
And then
gotta get through the
optimal
first inning, though. He's got an ERA, I think it's around 15 in the first inning this season.
I'm squeeze me, what?
Yeah.
That's
Yeah. The first three innings and second three innings for Houck are it's around 11 ERA for your first three innings and then in the 3-4 range for your next three.
Supposed to go the other way, like once, so he needs to see all the hitters as opposed to the hitters getting a second look at him.
I'm advocating for an opener before Houck in that first inning.
Advocating for an opener.
That would be my personal opinion. I know that doesn't fix everything, but he can ramp up against at least not your 1-2-3 hitters in the lineup second inning and on.
Or what if he treats the second inning like it's the first inning and it doesn't matter because it's a mental issue?
Well, then I continue to just be a radio producer and not the manager of the Boston Red Sox.
You know, like those guys that hate leading off. Some guys just hate leading off. It's a mental thing. They don't. And then you put them in the 2-hole, the 3-hole. They're fine. They just can't be leadoff hitters. There's one problem with a starting pitcher who doesn't want to start the game. That's literally the job, buddy.
That's the gig, pal.
What you got to do is go out there and set the tone and put your team in a position to win. It's funny how that works. Do you think Tanner Houck is long for a starter? Or do you think he could you see him, like, let's say Giolito gets it together, pitches to a 4-5 ERA, so six innings, three runs this season, right? Let's give him that kind of average. Bayo gets it together.
Who's your fifth starter, though? I mean, is it Newcomb? Are you going to put Newcomb back in the...
Hunter Dobbins, baby.
Hunter Dobbins has been a nice story.
Yeah, could be old Dickie Fitz was pitching well until his
strength. Richard Fitz. Like I heard Will Fleming say he's building back up some strength.
He never got tagged, Andy. Like he wasn't unhittable before he got injured. But
you just gave me a couple options, so I'm going to say no. Tanner Houck is not going to be a wire-to-wire starter for this team, even if it's one of those, he needs a little time on the injured list to just work through some things where he doesn't necessarily have an acute injury that occurs in a game. Yeah, there'll be a time when he's not in the rotation for a while. Because he has been, This isn't just this year. This goes back to last year, the second half of last year.
Ever since the poor guy got hit in the face in that damn game against the Yankees, it's been a roller coaster.
Yeah, I don't. I think he is not long for the Red Sox rotation the way he's been pitching. 617-779-7937. Let's squeeze in a phone call before we move along here. David in Florida, what are your thoughts on the Red Sox debacle of a loss last night in Toronto?
What's happening, boys?
Stop. Hey.
So I got a few things. First of all, let me ask you this question about the big picture. What do you think about moving pitching? What do you think about moving Walker Buehler up to the two spot in the rotation and flip-flopping him with Tanner?
I think it's only a matter of time, David.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
I think he's proven his value, and I think and you put your number one pitcher best, then you put your number two follow-up. You get on a win streak that way. I think they have to do that.
All right, thanks for the call, David. Yeah, I don't know that it really matters in the midst of a long baseball season if you're considered the one, the two, or the three. Like, postseason, yes.
Was that David said he had a few things.
Yeah, well, we didn't have time for a few things. We had time for the one thing. So this is like they tell
What's your one thing?
When you write an AP news story, they tell you to lead with all the important news because when it hits the wire, a lot of places are going to cut off the bottom of the story. So if you need to get it in early. Okay, I'm going to tell that to all our callers as well. Treat it like an AP news story. Lead with the good stuff because we might not get to the rest of the iceberg that's below the water. 617-779-7937. Red Sox are on the table. They fall 7-6 in extra innings. To the Toronto Blue Jays. They can't put a streak together here, a streak of success. We'll talk about that. We're also going to touch on Drake May and my Twitter poll, because I'm not going to say what I usually say because it would have sounded weird. Back-to-back days, Drake May was the subject of my Twitter poll. Red Sox, Drake May, more of your calls up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
This is WEEI Afternoons
with Andy Hart, Nick Fitzy-Stevens, and Ted Johnson.
Yeah, it's been great. You know, I think the guys last year I really enjoyed, and so far Coach McDaniels, it's been awesome. I think his ways, he does it. You know, he's been offensive coordinator, been head coach, does it at a high level. His stuff works. It kind of proof's in the pudding. He's coached a lot of different guys. He coached the best to ever do it, so it's pretty cool getting to watch, you know, old things, Tom, and see how he does it, and you know, a bunch of different guys play at a high level in the offense. You know, not just Tom. So it's been cool to watch, and I'm kind of learning the ways and learn the kind of ins and outs of it.
Patriots quarterback Drake May at Gillette Stadium, his press conference today, talking about Josh McDaniels and the early stages of their relationship. McDaniels back in New England yet again to be the coordinator, teach the offense to Drake May. Other aspects of that, he talked about how he's enjoying the amount that's put on the plate of the quarterback, Fitzy, that he can change things at the line of scrimmage. I think he has the last pen, is how he kept phrasing it. He has the pen last.
I thought it was the pin.
Oh, I thought it was pin.
Like a grenade.
Like, yeah, like pin. He's the last one to hold the pin, like grenade, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was pen. Why would I want to hold the pin?
Pen is in, like, I have the last chance to author this script and story.
Yeah, that's what I thought, like the last edit.
I think it was grenade!
Okay, now I need to hear that. What clip was that? Because I want to know about that. I thought it was pen, like the last edit. He edits it last before it goes, like, live. Like
honestly, who edits anything with a pen anymore?
Well, some teachers do right now. Most of it's in Google Docs.
Like authors, writers often red pen. Things.
Like Jordan, I bet you she used a red pen with Bill's book when she was editing it. Because I'm assuming she edited it.
Or did she use a red pen when he proposed like how much of his real estate she should have, and then she red penned some of his omissions?
I can tell you, I would have red penned her application for a $1.2 million mortgage multiple times. Just giving out mortgages willy-nilly to whoever wants them for $1.2 million?
It's impossible for the average working family of four these days to get a mortgage with a rate that doesn't, you know, rip you off like a Stafford loan, and she's got $8 million now. I know we'll get to that later. But
We're going to get to that. Ted Johnson's arriving, and there's more information. The New York Post is all over the globe. All right, Stiz has the audio.
News.
Let's listen to Drake May talking about being at the line of scrimmage, the power he has in Josh McDaniels' offense.
I think the ball's in my hands. I think you want that. I think, you know, I hold the pin last. That's what, you know, they say, and I think that's what you want.
Is it pin or pen?
It's pen.
I don't know, but that's what they say, whoever they is.
Yeah, but who's they? It's not a phrase. It feels like he's, unless they is Josh, is he quoting coaches?
Who has
the pin
Gemini
last?
Has to say.
Who has the pen last?
He said it twice. He doubled down on it later in the answer as well.
I know. As we learned last year, I don't always understand what he's saying. Sometimes I have to have it slowed down, played again, played again. He's got a little southern drawl thing that gets me on occasion. This might be one of those. Pin, pan, pin, pan.
I think it's a commentary on because he talked about how great it is to be behind the line of scrimmage and have the best view of the defense. So I think it's, you know, everybody else takes a look at it, then he has the final say before he throws this metaphorical grenade.
But last one to hold the pin before you pull it.
I'm the one who signs off on it is the way I took it. I have the final say. I sign off on this last. Like, I'm the final signature.
I think both are true. I think both are true.
You think it's what, Fitzy?
I think it's pin. Why don't you do a poll?
I don't do polls. I'm out of that business.
You're out of the survey business?
Just put it up with no context. Pen.
Either way, he seems to be liking his work with Josh McDaniels early in the process here. He actually said he got to work right after the Super Bowl. Remember when he made the rounds at the Super Bowl? He was doing all kinds of, I don't even know, interviews with everybody.
What was he shilling?
I forget. Toilet paper? I don't even know. Maybe that was another Patriot. Somebody would remember. Oh, that was Edelman that was shilling, I think, toilet paper. Anyway.
Oh, he had dude wipes.
He made the rounds, and those are tremendous. I am not a paid sponsor, but I do use them, and I enjoy them. I brought them to Green Bay with me in the backpack.
There's that image for everyone to try to flush out of their mind the rest of the day. Jeez. Go back to swearing. That was more comforting.
He said right after the Super Bowl. He started working on the offense because he knew there'd be practices coming, and boom, I need to at least sound like I know what I'm talking about when I come to the line of scrimmage, when I'm on the practice field, when I'm dealing with other players. And I have to think for him, it's not only exciting when he brings up, well, my offensive coordinator worked with Tom Brady, and that worked out really well, but also calming. Don't you think it would be calming for somebody like Josh McDaniels to be coming in and guide you? Like, you have... He spoke highly of the guy last year, as he refers to him now, also known as Alex Van Pelt. But he had to have known.
I have a name, Josh, damn it.
But, like, you know what I mean? Like, if he looked up, if he Googled Alex Van Pelt the way Alex Van Pelt Googled Marcus Jones to find out if he could play offense, he would have seen, wait, this guy hasn't called plays in the NFL for 15 years, and he's always been, like, the number three guy on an offense.
And how come he's the OC, but the head coach is calling plays?
So there had to have been a little, he was a good soldier about it, a little trepidation. Whereas if he looks up Josh McDaniels, he'd be like, wait, he led the top 10 offense in scoring, you know, 17 years straight or whatever the numbers are, the various accomplishments he's had with various quarterbacks and even, you know, Mac Jones. He probably looks at it and goes, that guy made Mac Jones good? Imagine what he's going to be able to do with me. I'm actually talented. I can play. I can run. I can throw and do all the things Mac Jones can't. So it has to be exciting.
And not freak out and not punch himself in the leg or drop multiple F-bombs on TV. You know, it's just
nothing wrong with dropping F-bombs on a microphone.
Okay. Through I've said it more than my fair share recently on the mic, in public, etc. But it's now occurring to me, listening to Drake talk again now, I've listened to this today's media veil, all 10 minutes of it multiple times, dissecting it here on the afternoon show.
I know when you didn't listen to it was 11:45.
Right, because it started at 12:15. 11:45. I could have listened to it 11:45 Central, just not 11:45 Eastern.
Maybe they were actually emailing Ted and I when we were in Green Bay.
Yeah, we got the times messed up. Last question.
Thank you, Stacey. So I wonder if some of what, like Drake Mays, we discussed this a bit last year on Six Rings as well. I wonder if Drake May's lack of assertive braggadociousness, his lack of being extra assertive, his lack of braggadocio, like he's not like, yeah, I'm the best at this MF-er, and you know, I'll tell you who's in charge, me. I got the last one to hold the pin. Like the aw shucksness, I don't think it's an act. I do think this is where, even though we've heard, perhaps he might be, I said, perhaps audience relax, could be a little more sensitive behind the scenes than we are familiar with or may realize.
I saw that on Twitter once.
Me too. The guy who said that got a beating. He stopped checking his mentions, I think, for a couple days after that. Anyway, point being, I wonder if the aw shucks nature of Drake May leads some to think that he's not, like, commanding enough, whereas he may have just been raised to be more humble because of his dad's athletic acumen and the fact that he had three bigger, stronger, taller brothers than him.
Is
that humility real, Andy? That's my question back to you.
I don't think you need to be a hothead to be a quarterback. I don't think you need, and we'll see how this evolves. You know, there was some talk last year that they actually wanted him to take the bull by the horns more in the competition. And
correct.
He was too deferential. We'll see where this goes as he settles in, as he places expectations on himself and Stephon Diggs and other guys. And then if those aren't met, how does he deal with that? And how does he evolve? Does he become more Brady, Marino, Philip Rivers? Or is he just sort of laid back, cool, calm, collected? And, you know, the results will decide what we think of it. That's the other thing I always say about that. If you're a hothead and win, that guy's got a fire in his belly. That's why he's so good. If you're
you need to be like that guy, yeah. Right. Be more like him.
Right. But if you're a hothead and lose, you're a hothead. You're bad for the team, bad body language. If you're quiet and win, cool as a cucumber. He's even keeled. He never gets high, too low.
Andy, that's the Peyton and Eli debate.
Right.
Because Peyton was so demonstrative and didactic, and Eli was just very unassuming, yet at the same time, effective when it mattered. Twice.
Beating Tom Brady and Bill Belichick's ass in the Super Bowl to collect a couple rings that are going to get him.
I would hardly say that was an ass whooping.
Well, no. I mean, if you beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, that's an ass whooping. Doesn't matter if it's 1 point or 10 points. You beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl, it's an ass whooping. 617-779-7937. Red Sox are on the table. Drake May's on the table. We'll get to Tom Curran at 3:30, but up next, Ted Johnson is coming in studio a fire, talking about something, because he always has a fire in his belly at 3 o'clock, and it'll be time for the three-point stance where I'm going to rip and bitch about LeBron James. That's next here on WEEI Afternoons.